say, yeah. I was thinking about what to say this morning, and I read through the two readings, and nothing immediately sprang to mind. Then I picked up the paper, newspaper, I mean, and it suddenly struck me how much evil, pain, and suffering there is in the world today. You know, from the Middle East, Far East, Europe, Eastern Europe, this country, you know, financial problems. The world is full of suffering and pain. And I thought it might be an idea to have a look at the problems that we suffer in the world. There is illness, there's disease, there's injustice, there are disasters, there's an almost infinite and unlimited amount of tragedy and grief. So why is there so much suffering and unhappiness in the world that God has made? God made the world to be perfect, but it is obviously not perfect. I'm sure that just as I have, you have at some time or other been in the position of the countless people who really want to try to follow Christ's way of living, but who can't reconcile Christianity and the God of love with the suffering of somebody that they know or even don't know. It wouldn't be quite so hard to understand, perhaps, if the people who suffered were evil or unpleasant. You know, you'd think they deserve it. That there was, after all, some justice in the world. But it appears so often that there is no justice. Indeed, quite the opposite. So why ever should Jesus let people suffer so appallingly? Right at the start, I know it's not quite at the start, but almost at the start, I want to say that I suspect there is no thinking Christian who has not been forced to face up to this problem. It's one of the great problems of our faith. Let me ask too that if any of you have an answer, tell me please, because I would love to know it. I can see no easy answer. I can see no complete answer. I can see no answer that doesn't beg a lot of questions. Even if you say that suffering doesn't come from God and attribute it all to the devil, that's not really an answer, because you're then saying that the devil has greater powers than God, which is leading to all kinds of problems of faith and belief and constancy in God. So instead of asking for an answer or an explanation, I thought it might be a good idea to have a look at what Christianity has to say about suffering. Christianity looks facts in the face. It says that pain is real. It faces quite squarely all the suffering in the world, and what's more, admits there's no stock answer, no easy answer to the problem. Christianity instead takes us to a green hill outside the city wall and invites you to look at a man, a suffering man, a dying man, a man in excruciating pain, a man with an unbearable thirst. Real pain, real suffering, cruel, stark, bloody, undeserved, and what is possibly the worst thing of all, a man completely alone. If you can think of yourself as alone, with no friends, no acquaintances, just you. That might give you an idea of what Jesus probably was feeling on the cross. See from his head, his hands, his feet, sorrow and love come mingling down. And more words from the same hymn, "Forbid it, Lord, that I should boast, save in the cross of Christ my God." And that's exactly what Christians are to do. Boast in the cross. Tell everybody about it. Say that because of the cross, we do know that the God we worship didn't or doesn't sit in some remote, far-off, comfortable place uncaring of mankind. He came down and he comes down. He is bearing our grief and carrying our sorrows. Yes, he knows all about pain. We may not know, we cannot tell what pains he had to bear. How true. The pains he did bear might not give me a theory about pain, but they do help me to bear mine. But that's not all. Up there on the cross is man, humanity. All humanity gathered up in the person of Jesus. Of his own free will, and by his own choice, he stretches out his arms from that cross and grasps all sin and takes it to himself. He takes it from us to him. And so up there on the cross is every action which has caused you suffering and pain. And equally up there on the cross is every action of yours which has caused suffering to others. Up there are both the comparatively few sins of others which have hit the headlines and also the many sins of yours and mine that only we know. And also the many sins of yours and mine of which we are thoroughly ashamed. And because God so loves the world, he is, so to speak, drowning in the muck and the garbage and the filth of human sin. Strong words, but I think necessary words. There is, of course, a contradiction in all this. When it comes down to it, how often have you heard things like, "Oh, you're only young once. Have a good time now before you have to settle down." In other words, "Oh, boys will be boys." Yes, I suppose girls will be girls as well. But in other words, sin doesn't matter that much. And we tacitly condone that sort of attitude. We continue to read that book, watch that film, flirt with this or that temptation. A fresh start tomorrow, we say. Tomorrow's another day. And then we sing with great gusto, "When I survey the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss and pour contempt on all my pride." I can give you no answer, really, to the problem of pain, suffering, and evil. The answer lies in you. But in conclusion, I will, however, say this. If you want to see into the mystery of suffering and why it exists and what it's all about, you must stand close to the cross of Christ. Watch how he died on Friday, which we call Good. Anything but good, really. Not in failure, but in triumph, bringing even from the hardened Roman army officer the heartfelt cry, "Truly, this was the Son of God." Watch with Christ. Allow his suffering to be your tutor and guide, to lead you to a greater, a deeper, a more complete understanding of the things that really matter. Amen. I just wonder, would it be possible to see